The EMS Educast is a podcast by and for EMS educators. Every week, our panel of education experts hosts a program that brings you the latest and greatest in EMS education technology, methods, and techniques. Your hosts will regularly bring you guests from all over the world to tell you about innovative EMS education programs and experiences in other places. Join us each week for the EMS Educast. And visit www.emseducast.com to subscribe with iTunes or the RSS feed, listen to archived shows, and view future show descriptions. The EMS Educast.
Welcome to the EMS Educast. On behalf of Bill Toon and Rob Terrio, this is Greg Fries, and also with our special guest, Kyle Bates, who also hosts the podcast PDU, which is just really outstanding. You can find PDU like PEDI-U and the EMS Educast and other great podcasts over at the ProMed Network. Of course, you can connect with us at facebook.com/EMS Educast. And I earlier was saying to Bill that we're up over like 115 episodes or something, and each month now we're getting about 10,000 downloads, and it's just staggering to me that we've gone on for so long and people continue to find interest and value in this, and we certainly appreciate your support. And Bill, we couldn't do this without the technology, but we also wouldn't do it if people weren't listening. So it's sure reassuring to me that they are, and I know for you as well.
Absolutely. It is just awesome. But it's unbelievable. You told, you were marked earlier, you said there's been as many as 10,000 downloads
in a month.
Just in and of itself is pretty amazing. So, yep, this is a whole new technology. So it's great to be here again tonight. So I'm looking forward to us chatting here, but it's been a while.
Yes, Bill, how have you been?
Oh, you know, it's tough out here, but I'm able to sit up from time to time and take nourishment.
I guess the sustaining or the archiving aspect of this is really fascinating, because like Kyle and I were just at NAMSI, and we had the opportunity to see some great speakers there. But even in a room that was packed with people, that was only a couple hundred EMS educators. And, you know, when we have a show here, anybody can listen to it any time. And I know we have people that go back to our very first episodes and listen, and it's still to this day, and find value in that. So we're glad to have your listenership and support. Unfortunately, Rob Terrio is having some technical difficulties and isn't able to, he's listening but not able to talk, I believe. So Rob, as you can, text in. We have two topics tonight. The first is earlier today. This is being recorded on Wednesday, October 5th, and Steve Jobs, the founder and CEO of Apple Computers, died earlier today. And certainly as I think back to my life as a student and then as an educator, Apple computer products have played a large part in that. And I thought it would be interesting for us to just take a few moments and maybe chat about that, of the impact of especially this technology and really how it changed the EMS education. And Bill, with your sort of longevity in the profession, maybe you want to start us out.
Well, I'm sitting here listening to what you said, and I've gone what I call full circle with this, but as I first got involved in EMS and 1975 is when I consider my official time, is when I finished my EMT training, was in May of 1975. But it was not until the early 80s, 81 or 82, that I went out and bought myself an Apple IIe, the E for the enhancement, and it had a dual disk drive, 5 1/4 inch floppy disk drive, a monochrome monitor, and a daisy wheel printer, and it was all Apple products, and it cost me about $3,400. And the amazing thing was, is my very first project I did with that program was to help write, using the word processing program there, the treatment protocols for the fly car service I was working for a hospital back in New York, and that was my first introduction into using a computer that I had purchased on my own. I was already familiar with like the Commodore 64 and a Compaq and some different devices there, and it was just really amazing. And then I, when I moved in into the teaching full time, I moved over to the PC world, and only within the last year have I abandoned for personal devices. If I given up PC and I've gone to a Mac ProBook, and to be back with Apple full time is just wonderful, because it is just, it's a powerful, excellent product, and it's just, I consider it intuitive. So it's been around for my entire career, and I'm sort of glad now I have an iPhone, and I had an iPod before this, and I have a Nano, and you know, and Apple is just, you know, I just don't even see why people bother with a PC product at all.
Yeah, there's certainly that intuitive operation nature. I think the first computer that I had did significant sort of work word processing stuff on was a Apple IIc, and maybe the C stood for compact because it was smaller. But I remember writing in high school a lot of short stories and other compositions, and you know, I think that transition of just how we interact with the elements on the screen is one of the things that big impacts of these Apple products. First the mouse, and then now the touchscreen technology, and just that changing expectation about how we use these products to also now receive information sort of like anytime, anywhere. That, you know, I think certainly cell phones arrived before the iPhone, but the iPhone sort of put together this whole package of podcasting and music and interacting with others that wasn't maybe happening other places. I think we have Rob back. Rob?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, good.
But you've been able to listen. We've just been reflecting a little bit on some of our Apple experiences and the impact on education. And I know I just gave you this breaking news a few minutes ago. Any thoughts that you've assembled yet?
It really knocks the wind out of your sails, you know, the news of Steve Jobs. I've never actually owned an Apple computer, and I'm a latecomer to Apple products. But between my wife and my daughter and I, we currently have 2 iPads and 3 iPods. And when I'm not teaching classes with my company-owned PC, I spend the rest of my day and evening on my iPad or my iPod. I'm always listening to podcasts on my iPod when I'm driving. I never listen to EMS Educast because I really don't like to hear the sound of my own voice a whole lot. But I listen to podcasts constantly. The Apple product is so intuitive and so such an incredible device.
Yeah, and, I had an iPod collecting dust. So I had an iPod, and so I kind of adjusted the settings and downloaded a few apps and some books and just handed it to my 6-year-old like a month ago. And he's reading books using the Kindle app, and he's playing games, and he's visiting the NASCAR news site all on that iPod with the Wi-Fi connection. And with the only real instruction I gave him was how to get it to light up.
That's awesome.
And he's sort of taking it from there. Kyle, how about you? You're sort of one of those stereotypical, like, oh, Apples are for graphic designers, you're a graphic designer, but for you, I'm sure your interaction with Apple products has been much more than just graphic design.
An Apple IIe with a floppy disk. 10 home, 20 run.
Yeah.
Remember all that?
Yes. ProDOS.
Yes.
ProDOS, yeah.
And all those in and lemonade stands and work through that, and I had Apple IIc as well, and through the ages, ended up buying all Apple. I've been Apple for years, as long as I've been working at it. Not just for graphic design stuff; it's easier. But I just like the. I am a very big fan of Apple. All my computers are Apple. The only thing I don't have Apple is my phone.
It's interesting because I've always been a PC guy, and I mean, most of us are creatures of habit, and I've always perceived Apple computer owners as smarter, more innovative people than me, and that Apple was, you know, perhaps too complicated for me. But I think in the not too distant future, I'll probably get a MacBook Pro.
Right on. Yeah, so I just wanted to start the show with a bit of just that sort of thinking about piece of, certainly there's been a lot of people that have made Apple what it is, but sort of that visionary piece to drive forward that Steve Jobs provided. And one of the things that I think, as you think about what he's done and who he is just a sort of like commitment to, this is who we are and this is what we do well. And certainly Apple's product lines have expanded with things like iTunes, but it's all centered around this single thing of how do you create and deliver information on devices that are intuitive and beautiful at the same time. And I think it's really cool. So thanks to Steve Jobs that we have a podcast, right? Bill, why don't you transition us into our main topic for the evening, and we'll take that on for 30 minutes or so.
Sure. Well, I think that what I'm really here is looking to pick the minds, your minds, of some information that can help me. I'm going to be helping two of my colleagues put on an educator workshop. And let me just quickly say, in the state of Kansas, there's three levels of educators that I look at. One is, the first level is a training officer. Second level, a training officer one, who can teach and administer continuing education courses within their department. Training officer two, which can do the same thing as a training officer one, but also can conduct first responder programs. And then the third level is the instructor coordinator, who can teach EMT, emergency responder, advanced EMT, paramedic, as long as they're at least certified to the level that they're teaching at. And all these levels are required to collect a certain amount of continuing education courses every 2 years, including formal instructor's course that has to be based on information out of the DOT National Standard EMS Instructor Program. So my three colleagues, or together the three of us, are going to be conducting a workshop, the same workshop for 6 days. 3 days we're going to conduct later in October in Wichita, and then we're going to come up here and do it in the Johnson County area here in December. But it's basically based on a shift schedule, so you only have to attend one of the 3 days, and they're roughly an eight-hour day. So my portion of the workshop is to discuss being able to build an effective media and materials to support the message, and then identifying technology for use in distributive-based EMS education and identifying technologies for use in the classroom-based EMS education. And I think it's very important that these participants, the class size is going to be limited to no more than 24 students. I want them to walk away at the end of this eight-hour day with at least somewhere between 2 and 4 tangible pieces of information that they can walk away with, something that really says, I can go back and apply this to my practice, regardless of what level of an educator that I'm at. And so I was really interested in not just having some slides in the front of the room and Bill talking, which Bill can do without a problem, but that's a little bit of old school. I'd like to be able to actually show them and demonstrate to them firsthand some technology that is available in the classroom, whether it be asynchronously through a much more distributive format or versus actually live in the classroom. Social media I can see come into play here. Twitter can come into play here. How the students use their laptops while they're in class. And Rob Terry and I had a little time to talk and discuss the idea of maybe even having, for example, him Skype in to this class that we're holding and actually talk about how do you record classroom stuff and turn it into a podcast for your students? That's the kind of direction I want to go with this. I don't want it to be Bill the talking head. As much as I love to talk, that's not what I want to do to them.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a sense, Bill, of what the sort of baseline knowledge and experience of the group is?
I'm going to have to say that the majority of the people that will be attending this are the TO1, which means that they're responsible for conducting and coordinating continuing education classes predominantly at the basic life support level, okay, the EMT level. That, I would say, is the majority of the – this is an assumption on my part, but that's probably the largest majority because – no different than everywhere else, there's more EMT providers than there are paramedics in any state.
Right. You know, Kyle and I get to teach together about once a year or so, and I think one of the things that he and I are regularly surprised by is that, you know, we're kind of in the bubble in terms of comfort and use of technology for both, like, teaching, but also just sort of, like, how we run our lives day to day. And then we start to teach a group about using some technology to be more effective teachers. And I think we're often surprised at how far on one end of the continuum we are compared to students in the room, or I guess educators, but, and then just like the great distance in between of comfort and experience with technology.
I almost want to think you kind of have the generation of instructors that are out there, you have the generation that used the 35mm slides, used overheads, and they had to be quick thinking on their feet. They didn't have these little fancy dandy note pages and stuff. So they had to have a real solid understanding of the material. I think what's happened is, as we've gone into technology, I think it's almost become a problem to a point, is that we start to get hooked on these PowerPoint slides. I think we get hooked on just to those notes, and it's easier and cheaper just to make, you know, a DVD as opposed to hundreds of 35mm slides, that they've kind of forgotten how to teach, and they don't interact with the learners. They sit there and they just kind of just read off the slides, or they just kind of deliver information kind of in a very cold fashion. And kind of going what Greg was saying is one thing that we found with some of the stuff that we've taught is people really enjoy interaction. They enjoy that discussion from the instructor. I mean, you know, we have to remember that we're dealing with, you know, adult learners to a point. We're dealing with EMTs, paramedics. But in terms of that, they want to talk, they want to interact. And I think that's something that we forget about. And we have a new group, I think, of educators are coming on. They're starting to see that, and they're trying to, how can we take that technology to the next level and make it beneficial for us?
I would certainly agree, and I just want to touch in there is that, so one of the things that we're committed to as the presenters of this thing is we're going to model the presentation style that we want the students to be actually conducting in their classroom. So one is instead of the traditional Kansas Educator Workshop, which can have anywhere from 100 to 150 participants sitting in a classroom, listening to some people go through a bunch of word slides, white backgrounds with black letters and lots of text on there, we're going to try to make sure that we model with very, very few slides, with small group activities, presentations and stuff. But what I want to do is I want to try to show them how right here, how simple as it is to, for example, bring a guest lecture in from another country into their classroom. You know, that it doesn't have to be, you have to wait for some huge conference to bring someone in to talk on a topic for as little as 10 or 15 minutes. To enhance the experience, since you have such a limited amount of time to capture your students. So that's just one of the ways I'm thinking.
One of the things that I've been writing and speaking about recently, and I'm getting some traction with, is the idea of what I'm calling a CE mashup, that you don't necessarily need anymore to be the person that creates the training program, but you can be the curator that finds the training materials and put them together in one place, whether that be putting them together in front of your classroom or putting them on a website or a blog or a learning management system. And what I mean by this would be using resources that already exist. Maybe it's a SlideShare presentation that an educator has uploaded about heart failure, and then there's a YouTube video from a product vendor about a CPAP device that's instruction on how to use it. And then maybe you can find, from your own run reports to have a case discussion in your classroom. So, you know, you could even just use those SlideShare slides in the class and then run that YouTube video on the device. And then you could facilitate a case discussion with the class, or you could post those resources or say, here's an article from EMS World. You know, I'd like everybody to read before they come to training, and you sort of curate information and decide what would be useful and applicable to your audience. So having some basic skills of how to do some internet searching to find that stuff, and then some enough knowledge about the topic to feel like it's worthwhile or not, and then some other basic skills about how to, like, embed a SlideShare presentation or an audio file from Blog Talk Radio or something onto your blog post and link to or embed a YouTube video. Could be good to mash up a CE program. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're already making me begin to think that we should probably encourage the students to bring their laptops with them if they have them. I'm beginning to think that that is a practical way to make sure that they have some hands-on opportunities so they could work along if you chose them, just to show them something as simple as what you just said. How do you bring a YouTube video into a presence, and then talk a little bit about what's applicable, about what videos should you consider or YouTube pieces should you consider, and how long should they be, and you know, I think that there's some value to that, so...
And that could be a small group activity. You could say, okay, we're going to take, you describe the concept, and then, you know, each of the groups is going to have, say, 10 minutes in groups of three or four people. And, you know, group A, intraosseous access. Group B, combi tube. Group C, pediatric assessment. And finds some training materials that could either stand alone to be asynchronously viewed, or that you could deliver synchronously and take advantage of the hard work other people are doing. Another great example is I found some videos on YouTube of kids having absence seizures, and very few EMTs actually ever get to witness the patient seizing, and especially something like an absence seizure that's annotated by parents saying, look, here's signs that my daughter's having a seizure right now. I think can also help set the scene for assessment activities. And Nancy Dalton shared an idea of putting a picture up on the, you know, she'd put a projector screen behind the simulator mannequin of like a car crash or a patient with chest wall trauma. And then the mannequin would be right there on the in for real, and they'd say, this is the patient that's just been extricated from the car. So a real simple way to use technology to add a little bit more realism to just say, you know, we can't tear up the simulator skin, but imagine it looks like what you see on the screen here.
I'm just writing that down. I like that idea.
That's pretty clever. Yeah. And you could even add in, I was watching this low-angle rescue video the other day on YouTube, where down in the river side, they're putting some guy in a Stokes basket, and your view is from the top, from the road. I was thinking, okay, I could run this video and say, okay, you're the ambulance crew at the top of the road. As you watch this patient being packaged, what are you getting ready? What supplies do you need to have? What design your patient's problem list, because in 3 minutes, these firefighters are going to dump this patient at your feet and say, go. And then what are you going to do? So you could sort of set the scene for people using video like that.
So, Bill, is your plan to discuss some basic pedagogy, how to make the learning experience student-centered with sort of group work, a little bit of lecture, a little mix of stuff, and then move on to a technology-enhanced class?
Yeah, I only talked about the last 2 hours of the presentation that I'm doing. The previous hours, one of the things we're going to be focusing on, and I can easily send you the outline for the whole program here, we're going to be talking on presentation skills, how to basically speak to small groups. Because one of the things that we realize is many of these instructors are challenged about how to do inquiries of students in a classroom, how to ask questions and wait for responses, and then, you know, how to facilitate them not leading the discussion, but encouraging the students to actually have the discussion. So my two other colleagues are presenting a number of topics beforehand, and I'm finishing up the end of the day. So I'll have to send you guys what the whole schedule's like so you can see what we're trying to achieve. And we're literally still building this program right up until almost the first day that we're going to present it.
Another idea is there's all sorts of polling software and game software. I've been having some fun recently with something called twtpoll.com. It's to create simple Twitter polls, but anybody can vote on the poll. I have a lot of quiz questions that people are taking with these online education lessons, and sometimes if somebody complains about a quiz question, and they say, well, there's no way choice A is right, I create that quiz question as a Twitter poll, and then I put it out to the Twitterverse, and I say, well, how would you answer the, you know, answer this question for me? And sometimes it helps me say, okay, this is a good question. It's just this one user because everybody else is answering it the way I thought it should be answered. Or, boy, it turns out it's confusing. But, you know, you could also, something an educator could do is create some polls ahead of time. I'm working on this right now for a workshop I'm doing next week where, because I don't know the audience, I'm just doing some basic things to learn about their experience and background. But I'm also going to be doing some teaching based on their answers. For example, I have one of the questions I'm going to ask is, an online webinar is an example of asynchronous, synchronous, unsynchronous, or synchronicity e-learning. And you know, if everybody says, oh, that's synchronous, then I can sort of gloss over that because obviously they know that. If I get this mishmash of responses, then I can spend some time talking about the difference between synchronous and asynchronous e-learning and that a live webinar is synchronous, for example.
And Bill, you talked about, helping these educators engage their audience in discussion. I think case-based discussion is probably the best way to do that. And, it sounds like what you were describing is the Socratic dialogue that happens in class where you'll put a question out to the class and someone will answer. And from there you ask them, okay, tell me more, explain the rationale for that or explain the pathophysiology of that. Or, all right, so someone has a pulmonary embolus. What's their chest pain like typically? Okay, so it's pinpoint, it's unilateral. How do they typically describe it? What's their air entry going to be like? And you just sort of escalate and keep drilling down and down and down into those questions. And that's just a really powerful way to engage an audience, I think. But the key, I think, to something like Socratic dialogue when you're doing case-based presentations is to think carefully about the wrong answers that students give you and think about, how they arrived at that answer. So without coming out and saying, no, that's not right, and moving on to someone else to answer, I think it's important to sort of acknowledge their thinking process. So oftentimes I'll say to them, the logic of your answer makes perfect sense, but in fact, you know, the answer is not quite as intuitive. So people don't feel alienated at all. I think that's, you know, one of the keys to engaging them in that kind of dialogue.
So you think the Robin Williams approach from Dead Poets Society that goes, you're wrong, next question.
You know what questions really annoy me are the rhetorical questions that instructors ask. So the questions that really have no answer whatsoever, you know, the rhetorical questions that, you know, like similar to the ones parents ask, like, is that what you'd like to do? And everyone knows full well, no, that's not what you'd like to do. We know we're going to get punished if that happens, you know. Or the other question I really dislike from instructors is they'll ask, we're going to give nitroglycerin to that patient, right? And in fact, what the answer they're looking for is, no, we're not going to do that. So they're looking for just the opposite. I find those questions really irritating and alienating. There's a real art to Socratic dialogue with the students and making them feel, even when they're wrong, that their thinking process is good. And if, you know, if they're wrong, asking them more questions so that they discover for themselves that that was the incorrect answer, and at the same time they come up with a correct one.
Okay, you guys are giving me a bunch of very good ideas here right now. Kyle, you've been rather quiet. I want to tap into you a little bit.
I've just been kind of taking it all in here. You know, building on what Greg was talking about, something that I do, and actually it's kind of how I present though, is doing case-based learning, but visual cases. And we've had some attendees to some of our workshops that the instructors actually take that case-based learning, that the visual case-based learning that we teach them to create, and actually teach their students how to do it. So they'll say, all right, this group, you guys are going to be heart failure. Okay, you guys over here, you're going to be a STEMI. And all right, now create your case and go out and photograph it. And what that does is they have to think about all the signs and symptoms that they're going to present. They're going to have to think about photographing how might the patient present to them, and then how they're going to progress that case through their presentation to the other students. And I always find it an interesting way of it really puts the learning onto the students. It's almost, you know, a problem-based learning in terms of they have to go out and, you know, I'm not going to sit here and talk to you about these. You need to research these. And it really kind of helps strengthen their lifelong learning. So when they are in the field, they know how to, you know, search diseases and conditions and treatments, and then help present them.
All I can say is that I agree with you. And what you're making me think about is how to we're going to have the students do some pre-work beforehand. So I'm thinking about taking your suggestion right there and putting it into that pre-work. Because what we want them to do is we want them to come and do a 5-minute presentation right up front. You know, we're going to assign them some general topic areas and ask them to do a 5-minute presentation, which we're going to video, and then provide some feedback to them about their the most basic presentation style stuff. You know, did you tell them what you wanted to tell them? You told them, and then you told them what you told that we're going to tell them, type thing. That basically approach there, but adding in encouraging them to use less words if they choose to use PowerPoint and more visual might be a way to get them to come in with that stuff, and then we can build upon it during the course of the day and stuff. The only thing is I'm afraid of that I want to make sure I don't do is overwhelm them, and then they walk away feeling just overwhelmed and nothing right. else.
Yep, I'm overwhelmed with that thought. You know, one of the things I was going to add, Bill, is if your audience is primarily people that teach continuing education, I think Kyle's point of get them to be creating the content. So the educators in your workshop primarily teach continuing education, so their audience is people that should have both the foundation knowledge and actual experience to draw off on. So that sort of group work where they teach each other, I think, is a great idea. The other thing that continuing education could use a lot more of is an assessment up front to determine what amount and what topics or what depth is really necessary, that starting with a competency assessment, whether it be a written test or a hands-on skill performance or a patient scenario, can help you decide who actually needs the continuing education and who doesn't. And certainly that could probably be a whole nother workshop of setting up that type of competency assessment. It's something to be thinking about. And certainly there's technology that could play a role in that in terms of creating tests inside a learning management system or some sort of online test tool, or just using a checkoff sheet to see if people have it or not.
Yes, I'm making a note about that right now. Rob, what do you think now that you've heard a little bit more about this, the idea that we had talked about once before about either Skyping you in, or you mentioned another program, and just talking a little bit how to podcast within your classroom? Do you still think there's a role for that kind of demonstration?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I had Kyle come into one of my classes, and we gave a little bit of a presentation, and it was completely on the fly. I was logged into Skype, and I happened to see Kyle there, and brought, you remember that, Kyle?
Oh yeah,
and brought you in, and Kyle had a
shirt on. I had like my pajama top on. Like, yes, sir.
So he videoed in and taught the class. Now I've had several people come into my class for 10-15 minutes using Skype or using Blackboard Collaborate, and it's fantastic. It's a shock for the students when they see that, and so I think that's a great enhancement. Great example of technology enhancement of the classroom when you can bring a guest in from anywhere in the world. Skype is really good for just a quick video guest talk from someone from somewhere in the world. A friend of mine who is a critical care flight paramedic in Ottawa, he's kind of an expert in chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear incidents. And that's kind of outside my area of expertise. So he'll come in for an hour, 2 hours to my class, either via Skype or Blackboard Collaborate, and give a talk with the students. And what I love about Skype and Blackboard Collaborate as well is that he can hear the students. I don't have to be the intermediate guy. He can actually hear them through my laptop computer, and they can hear him crystal clear. And so when they ask questions, I don't even have to repeat the questions for him. That's how good the technology is. Even I thought that the mic wouldn't be sensitive enough, and I just have a cheap PC. Unfortunately, I don't have an Apple, but just a cheap PC. But it really works brilliantly. And so all you need is in the class is a webcam that you can turn towards the participants so that the guest speaker can see them, because that makes it a little more interesting. When Kyle, when you came on with my class, I don't think you were able to see the students, were you?
No. Staring at you there, Rob.
Yeah, staring at me, and Kyle knows what I look like. And it's not pretty, right? But it makes
up.
A lot. He's looking at my nose because I was standing and the laptop was on the podium, right? So, which is even more distracting when you're trying to talk to an audience. But if you can do that with your own laptop, point a webcam to the participants in the class so the guest speaker sees an audience, it just makes it a little bit more easier to engage. And man, what an incredible turnout it is for students to just get that variety. They're used to hearing you, and someone else comes in for even 15 minutes. It just gets them completely charged up. Not so much with Kyle, but
well, I think that,
yeah, but
I gotta go. Sorry.
I just think it's important that I look at that. Skype is really, to me, I found it to be just phenomenal in the format that it is. And to not introduce that to people and show them how they could bring a guest lecturer in so easily,
right,
even into their small group activity of the five guys in the firehouse in rural Kansas, as long as they have an internet connection, that they can achieve this capability to bring someone, like you said, who is a subject matter expert in a topic area that they have some interest in, but they can't get the person there, or they can't afford to, but the person is, willing to give up their time for the sake of educating other professionals.
Well, it doesn't have to be somebody from across the world too. I would imagine rural Kansas, you know, training officers might be few and far between. And even just to say to somebody in the neighboring county, could you be part of our EMS training next month and we'll have you come on by Skype instead of driving the 90 miles over here. And there's Skype is nice because it's just fall off a log simple way to do video, that one-to-one video. And like Rob said, to turn the camera around, you can also do screen sharing. Google Plus has a thing called a video hangout. I've yet to have a video hangout, but it sure seems like an intriguing way to do group video chats. And as I understand it, they're rolling out features to even allow you to just give people the link so they can watch and eventually record and post those group video chats to YouTube. So,
you know, I think something would be kind of cool, and I have tried this, but would be to have a round table in your class, a Skype round table or a Google round table, where you have four guests, just like, you know, we have right now between the four of us on Skype, and the students can see, you know, what you and I see right now, the images of those four guests. And I'm talking right now and I can see my little panel flashing, so the students would see the same thing. And you can have a group of three, four, or five experts on a particular topic having a panel discussion, and then the participants in the classroom being able to engage them as well and ask them questions.
Absolutely. Well, I'm keeping track of the time here and everything.
Right.
One last thing that I'm thinking about here is I still think it would be worthwhile, Greg, is to try to create a similar, you know, I have 2 hours, so having Rob help for a portion of things, but I would be interested in still having them see something about something like CenterLearn. You know, what is a commercial-based learning management system that's geared towards EMS, to introduce them to that, because many people may not be aware of it at all that are doing this kind of thing, and something like CenterLearn could help a smaller department meet some of its challenges that it has, or even a larger department. So I still would like to key in something there along those lines for the program, somewhere again around the 15-minute slot and stuff. And I'm not sure if you would be the best person to do it or someone from your central office and stuff to introduce that.
I'd be happy to. And I just sent you a link that I'll put in the show notes. It was an article EMS1.com earlier this month called The Benefits of Online EMS Education that talks about some of the different features of a learning management system, not just the CenterLearn LMS, but any learning management system could provide. And the record keeping is really valuable, to have all the training records in one place, certainly whether it be classroom or hands-on or online training. And then what I always say to people as far as like creating your own content, whether it be just to stand up and deliver it in the classroom or to put it in a learning management system, you know, you first got to remember what your objectives are, and then drive the amount of whiz-bang and time and resources you put into that piece of content based on your objectives. And, you know, there's still a lot of teaching that I could do with a whiteboard and a dry erase marker, and if my marker failed, like some sand and a stick. And I think that sort of gets back to Kyle's opening thought about you got to be an educator, number one, and then start learning technology to support your skills as an educator next.
And Bill, I definitely think it's worth talking with this group of educators about podcasting. You know, of all the technologies that I've used in the classroom, webcasting, screencasting, podcasting, smart board, everything else, by far the most powerful thing in my face-to-face classes is actually recording the classes. An incredible thing happened this year that I never, never, ever would have expected. I was teaching my first year class, and 2 weeks into the semester, and I was engaging the students in this Socratic kind of dialogue and asking them questions. And one of the students came up with this incredibly brilliant answer, and it was far above and beyond knowledge and comprehension. It was really a critical thinking answer. And I said to her, I have to say that is the most brilliant answer I've ever heard from a first-year student in second week of class. And in fact, I'm not sure I would even expect that level of an answer from second semester. And her response to that was, I listened to the podcast of your class last year. And I said, you listened to my podcast before you came into our program? She said, yeah, I was a student here taking pre-health, and I found out about your podcast. I was listening to it. So I asked the group, has anyone else listened to the podcast before they came into the program? And 8 hands went up, and 2 of them were from other colleges. So it struck me year after year after year that the students, what they get out of a podcast is they listen to material in the class. Sometimes it's a little overwhelming because they're learning some difficult concepts, and they don't quite get it all. They look at their notes. Their notes sometimes make sense. Sometimes it's just their perception of what they think they heard. But when they listen to the podcast, often what students tell me is they just have one epiphany after another because something didn't make sense. But when they heard it again, the light just went on. And so as simple as it is, just recording your class has been incredibly, incredibly powerful.
And I'm going to share one closing note example just to reinforce that. Back when I was doing what I call primary entry-level paramedic education back in New York, and this is, you know, now 25-some-odd years ago, I had a student in my class, and he was a Hasidic Jew, so his language skills were not as strong as the other students, and he didn't read English as well, but he tape-recorded every single class and would play it back over again, and he was my top student in the program, and he scored the highest on the national registry, the state exam, performed phenomenally well in clinical areas and stuff, and he just, that was the way he learned, and that was his own way of how do I overcome something that I know I'm not as strong as the other students are, and it was very, and that's so many years ago, so it's very refreshing to hear students talk about that. Well, I just want to say thank you. You know, what I love about the EMS Educast is that even though I'm sometimes the one that's sitting here as the, you know, the co-host and stuff, I learn just as much from every speaker and each other every time we get together. And then focusing tonight on something that I'm trying to accomplish, you know, this helps me a great deal, and hopefully it helps other people that are going to listen to this tonight. So I just want to thank you, for taking the time, Greg, Kyle, and Rob, to share some of your observations and thoughts with me. I appreciate it greatly.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking us.
Pleasure.
And this is a good point to remind everybody that you got less than a month to get in your proposals for NAMSE Symposium 2012. Going to be Orlando. I know Bill's working on a proposal, and I've got some ideas, and I'm sure Kyle's already submitted half a dozen amazing things, and Rob, you and I will probably be the two last guys at the last moment, do you think?
I'm working on a couple of proposals too. Yeah, I'm good. Really hoping to get there.
Yes, bring the fam. Mm-hmm. Enjoy South Florida in August. August when it's hot. Kyle, how can listeners connect with you and the work that you do?
They can find me over at my website, kyledavidbates.com. You can also find me on Twitter at ImageMedic. And you can find me over at my other two projects, my two podcasts, pedi-u.com, as well as firstfewmoments.com.
Excellent.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, glad to have you, and thanks for jumping on. Rob, how's that YouTube channel of yours working?
Really good. Almost at 50,000 viewers so far.
Holy moly.
Yeah. I just have one last parting thought for you, Bill, and,
yes.
And that is make sure you leave some time aside for the participants to network with one another, because I find by far when I get together with other educators at symposiums and conferences, probably the best part about that is just networking with other instructors and learning from them. So when you talk about group work, that might be one of the things to focus on is, you know, what have you learned, and, you know, what challenges have you experienced, and allow them to have an exchange, a dialogue about those things so they can learn from each other. I think it's a great opportunity.
Bill, can out-of-staters come to the Kansas EMS Educators Workshop, or if EMS educator in Kansas hasn't heard of this yet and they want information, how can they get it?
Well, one is The answer is yes. It's not just to the local personnel. It's only limited by the fact that we're only going to accept 24 candidates. And it's an open workshop, and it's already been advertised within the regions that both the workshops will take place in. But you can always go to the Johnson County MedAct website, and there's an education link there that will take you to our program that we use called Go Sign Me Up, that will let you know about this program and how to look into it and be able to participate in it and everything if you are interested in doing that. So that's one way of doing it, but maybe I'll throw something up on Facebook, our EMS Educast Facebook page, so some other people have some contact information there. So.
Sure, that'd be great. That would be great. So I think that's a wrap for the EMS Educast this week, and thank you all for being part of it, and we'll keep after it. I believe we got another show coming up next week. So thanks, everyone. Again, on behalf of Bill Toon, Rob Theriault, and Kyle Bates, this is Greg Fries from the EMS Educast.